It is Locked On Jazz for the 19th of June. The latest news and rumors. The biggest decision the Jazz have to make. Kevin Pelton runs us through some numbers, and we'll look at Jerome Robinson, Josh Okogie, and a more Grayson Allen. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA Insider. Today's show brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai and the Advocates. Let's just run through the latest news and rumors. Then I've got the biggest decision the Jazz have to make. Kevin Pelton did some great work on the draft numbers-wise, and we'll see what he has done and what he looks at. They also did it. They did an interesting ultimate grade A mock draft where teams were able to get the guy perfect for them, and they took Aaron Holiday for the Jazz at 21. I don't know that he'll be there, but they compare Holiday to Eric Bledsoe or Jeff Teague, they being Jonathan Givony, Kevin Pelton, Bobby Marks, somebody else, I think, as well. So interesting little feature that they put together there. All right, let's get to the latest rumors of what are out there and what's taking place. Kemba Walker may be available. That name's circulating again. Not sure if he fits next to Donovan, but worth trying to figure out. Cleveland and the Kevin Love talk is not for a dump. They would only do it if they really acquired something and they're willing to put their pick with Kevin Love to try to get a player that makes them dramatically better. Indiana is in talks for Phoenix's second first-round draft pick, trying to make a deal there, some people say, to go get Kevin Huerter. Josh Okogie is the guy with the biggest upswing. Some have told me he'll be gone by 20 in the draft. Orlando, according to Woj on ESPN, will be trying to decide between Colin Sexton and Trae Young. It's a little bit of a surprise. The 76ers, who most people have zeroed in on Mikal Bridges, will have Kevin Knox and Zaire Smith back in for a second workout today. And I think those are most of the big kind of the rumors are just are crazy right now, that the amount of big things that could take place on draft day are out there and pretty remarkable. All right, so now let's get to the biggest decision the Jazz have to make. And the biggest decision the Jazz have to make is, while the franchise is probably in better standing than it has ever been before, it is perceived better around the league than it's ever been before. It is a reasonable spot for someone possibly to choose to play to than it ever has been before, free agent-wise. Do the Jazz fundamentally and really believe that with cap space next offseason, they can acquire a marquee player? I think that we're closer to doing it than we ever have been before. We have Dennis Lindsay running a fabulous show. We've got an ownership group that's shown great support. More and more players have sampled it to see what it looks like. With Trevor Booker and Joe Johnson and Tabo Cephalosha, and the word around the league is better than it has been before. But do you really, at the core of things, fundamentally believe that in the summer of 2019-20, that if there's free agent money, that the Utah Jazz will, and other people have free agent money, that the Utah Jazz will be able to acquire a talent? This is really the self-analysis piece that you have to do if you're the Utah Jazz. You have to figure out whether or not we've really reached a level where we believe we can go sign a marquee free agent. Because if you do, then preserving that flexibility is awfully important. But if you take the other approach, which is, you know what, there aren't a lot of programs out there that really can go get somebody. We are still in Utah, which is not a particularly appealing place. There aren't a lot of places that are greatly appealing. And the chances of us being able to talk a player into signing, into cap space, even with Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, Quinn Snyder, Dennis Lindsay, is limited. Then you make a trade where you take back contracts. Where, as I tried to on our mock draft, in a deal that was turned down, but quite honestly, I think in real life would probably be accepted, you go to Charlotte, who has Marvin Williams on the books for $14 million this year and $15 next year, and you send them Alec Burks and the 21st pick for the 11th pick, $15 million to move 10 spots in a draft is a pretty steep price. Nicholas Batum would... I don't know how the Jazz could put Kemba Walker and Nicholas Batum together. Batum, $24 million, and then $25, and then a player option for $27. He might have the worst contract in all of the NBA. He might have the single most unmovable contract in all of the NBA. But are you suddenly willing to do something? Is there a player out there that makes it worth taking on Nicholas Batum? One guy sent me a deal in which we took Nicholas Batum and Marvin Williams and then ended up with the fourth pick. Chandler Parsons, who probably can't play again, is $24 million in 18-19 and $25 million in 19-20. Is Chandler Parsons' contract $25 million extra dollars 2 years from now? And if you're trading, you'd have to trade some other pieces. An Alec Burks and probably a bunch of those Cephalosha to Rebko, those players. Assuming that Chandler Parsons can never play, are you willing to take, a big gulp and $24 million to get to the fourth pick? Now, that one actually has some interesting arguments to it, because the chances of us ever getting another top five pick, as long as we have Gobert and Mitchell, are pretty slim. And so there's a unique, it's if you believe in the process that you got to take shots at the top of the draft, then there's an idea there. Or at least, and then you're playing above the cap because of Parsons. You're trying to re-sign Dante. You're trying to re-sign Favors, and that's your move. But the key to this whole decision is whether or not the Utah Jazz fundamentally believe that they have a real chance a year from now to acquire a player. And you have to, the Jazz have always operated that they are most likely to not, cap space is a flexibility to make a trade, not to sign a free agent. And is that still how they feel? Miami gets interesting if you suddenly decide that. You know, Dragic is at $18 million next year, has a player option, $19 million for the year after. Every Hassan Whiteside I wouldn't touch. Tyler Johnson has a $19 million contract this year and $19 million on the next one. Do you believe in Justice Winslow enough that you'd be willing to take Tyler Johnson's contract and Justice Winslow and you send them something, probably not your draft pick, but in some sort of another separate deal in which you're able, you take on that contract to be able to get your hands on Justice Winslow. I actually don't mind that scenario because I don't think Tyler Johnson's awful. But the fundamental decision is what I'm talking about. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. The lineup of Hyundai cars right now is just terrific. And if I think there's a generational gap. If you're listening to me and you're 35 and below, I think you know Hyundai. I think you know that brand. You understand the value, the amount of features, what you get. I think if you're over 35, you're like me. It took you a moment to probably is taking you a moment to understand who Hyundai is compared to what they were when they first came on the market. What they are now is a lineup of high-level cars with every bell and whistle that is got great safety ratings and is way cheaper than everybody else and has all the bells and whistles. On the SUV lineup, it's the small little Kona that's so great. I loved the Ioniq. The Ioniq is their version of the Prius. If you're looking for a hybrid, go drive the Ioniq. Just fabulous. Also, we've got the Santa Fe Sport. We just bought the big Santa Fe with three rows of seats. It's all at 4646 South State Street in Murray, also located in Linden. And it's Murdoch Hyundai. And when I say Murdoch, what I mean is the no-regrets buying experience where they give you the five-day price match guarantee, the car washes for life, the safety inspections for life. They do everything they can from extending service hours to making things available for you. It's Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. All right, Kevin Pelton does great, amazing draft work, and he's done a few pieces. One is he's ranked all of the players on the draft board. So if you look at his ESPN analytics, best draft prospects, he released it again on the 13th. The number one player, according to the metrics by Pelton, is Luka Doncic. It's not close. In fact, he's the best prospect since Anthony Davis. Looking at just what he's done is he's combined the numbers and Jonathan Giovanni's top 100. The numbers, the number one player in the numbers is Luka Doncic, number one by far. Number two is Trae Young. Number three is Zana Musa. That's pretty interesting. So Musa is who I took in the live draft the other day, or in the mock draft the other day for Locked On Podcast Network. He's eighth overall when you combine the 19th in the top 100, and he's third in stats. At age 18, Pelton writes, Musa was one of the best players in the Adriatic League, and the track record for wings is mixed. Dario Saric, Bogdan Bogdanovic, have done well. He projects as an efficient scorer thanks to accurate shooting both inside and outside the arc. And the question is whether that athleticism would rank. So maybe there's something that falls apart, but he did do that. So he's the third overall, pure numbers only. Mikal Bridges is four. Michael Porter, five. Jaren Jackson, six. Mitchell Robinson, the kind of unknown big man, seven. Kevin Huerter, eight. Jacob Evans, 9. DeAnthony Melton, 10. Kind of like him, by the way. The 11th ranked Miles Bridges. DeAndre Ayton, 12. 13, Gary Trent Jr. That's much higher. And over the years, by the way, when Pelton has a guy he's much higher about, Fred VanVleet, Rajon Rondo, it's often panned out. The 14th ranked numbers guy is Kendrick Williams out of TCU. Landry Shamet at 15 out of Wichita State is 15. Mo Bamba is 16. Here's some of the guys. Let me continue through 20 and then 17 is Kevin Herver out of Texas Arlington. 18, Jalen Adams out of St. Bonaventure. Number 19 for Pelton is Eli Okobo out of France. The 20th ranked numbers player, according to Pelton, is Bonzi Colson out of Notre Dame. And the 21st is Zaire Smith. Some other numbers of interest of players who you would have not heard and you're wondering why. Marvin Bagley is 43rd. Robert Williams, Texas A&M, 28. Wendell Carter, 46th. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 37th. Lonnie Walker, 33rd. Colin Sexton, 39. Kevin Knox, 47. So some guys there numbers-wise. Troy Brown, 32, expected to go. I got to figure, by the way, I really think Troy Brown slips on draft day. He just can't shoot at all. I mean, he just can't shoot at all. And to me, that's a pretty big issue. Troy Brown's shooting last year, catch and shoot, 0.83 points overall for a catch and shoot. Off the bounce, 0.61 points. The two worst. That I don't care about all the other athleticism. DiVincenzo is 26th. Grayson Allen is 23rd. So his overall consensus is between the eyeball, Jonathan Giovanni, you know, and his computer, which is, I think he's just being nice. Like, let's just go with his computer ranking. Is Doncic 1, Ayton 2, Young 3, Jaren Jackson 4, Michael Porter 5, Mikal Bridges 6, Mo Bamba 7, Zana Moussa 8, Mitchell Robinson 9, Miles Bridges 10, Herter 11, DeAnthony Melton 12, Jacob Agathons 13, Marvin Bagley 14, Zaire Smith 15, Eli Okobo 16, Robert Williams 17, Gary Trent Jr. 18, Wendell Carter 19, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander 20, Lonnie Walker 21, Colin Sexton 22. The other thing that Pelton did is he has a neat little thing which projects you to be an all-star starter, role player, bust. I love this type of analysis because maybe I'll update my rankings tonight on this. Over the years, I've done this time and time again. The chances are that two of the top 10 players are going to be an all-star. About seven of the top 10 are going to be starters. And then from that point on, it's like 50-50. So the player most likely to be a starter is Jaren Jackson at 42%. You got to combine all-star and starter as one thing. So Marvin Bagley is most likely to be a starter, according to Pelton's systems here, at 54% with 16% being an all-star. Doncic is a 53% likely to be a starter, 14% to be an all-star. Ayton is 49% starter, 12% all-star. Mikal Bridges, interestingly, is a 43%, but a 15% to be an all-star. It's very high. Trae Young is 38% chance to be a starter, just 38%, and 12% to be an all-star. These numbers are the ones you should be looking at realistically. Down in the Jazz realm of things, some interesting names that Pelton has that a kid out of Georgia, Goga Bitadez, 28% chance to be a starter. Jared Vanderbilt out of Kentucky, 25%. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, 32%, which is high. Troy Brown, who I just blasted, 30%. So his most underrated players are DeAnthony Melton, Kita Bates Diop, Antetokounmpo out of Dayton, overrated are Lonnie Walker, Eli Okobo, Aaron Holiday. Some of the players we've talked to, he has Kevin Herter as a 4% chance to be an all-star, 23% chance to be a starter. Holiday, 4% chance all-star, 20% starter. Melvin Frazier, 3% and 18%. Landry Shamet, 5% and 14%. Grayson Allen, 3% all-star, 18% starter. I watched him again last night and liked him. Josh Okogie, 4% and 17%. Pretty interesting, much more realistic kind of look at things, just of what the real chances are your guy hits, right? So the chances are the guy the Jazz get actually has a below 50% chance of being a starter, probably below about 30% chance of being a starter. He has him as about a 25% chance of busting. My guy Mo Wagner comes off 23rd on the list with a 25% chance of being a starter. I don't know if I thought he'd think he's a starter. DiVincenzo, 28%. Moussa, 30%. So some interesting things there by Kevin Pelton. Today's show brought to you by The Advocates. I hope the day doesn't come where you're in a car accident and you need Matt and the crew to help you out. But in case you do, accidents are all different, but the process to get you what you deserve, to get you good results, to make sure nothing bad happens to you is really the same. See, 3% of all accidents actually get to arbitration. Only 1% goes to trial. So that's 97, 96% of them are being solved by lawyers outside of the courtroom. So you better have somebody who's experienced. 25 years, the Advocate's been doing this. In the process, Matt and his crew have built a 106-step process to help you out along the way. Here's what happens. You call 801-355-5550. That's 801-355-5550 for Utah Advocates or utahadvocates.com. The lawyer calls you back within 60 seconds, understands your needs, where you sit, what the circumstances is, puts you into the system, marks some things down about what your needs are, and they are able to, while going through an airplane checklist, customize the experience for you and be able to get the experts in the field to deal with each of the steps, whether it's the auto insurance companies, whether it's the hospital, whether it's the car repair, whatever it is in dealing with your employer, they can deal with all of these things for you. 801-355-5550. That's 801-355-5550. Okay, last night I watched Jerome Robinson out of Boston College. He's not a big kid. You know, I think, and by the way, his name didn't, that's interesting, his name didn't show up here on any of Pelton's stuff. I thought I was going to fall in love. I had high expectations. He comes out as 55th on Pelton's numbers breakdown on where he, on starter kind of breakdown on things. So he is, and he comes out as a negative win share, 55th overall. And I didn't love him. He's smooth. Was pretty. I watched him play Georgia Tech and Josh Okogie, who, as I said earlier, is on moving way up the boards. I thought he played some good defense. I thought he was really smooth. I thought he had a good release. I didn't love his balance. I thought he was off balance an awful lot. Could be a strength issue. I thought he was predominantly left-handed when driving. In fact, thought it was almost exclusively left-handed. And I didn't think he had multiple moves. Anytime he had multiple moves where he had to go left, cross back right, come back left, or anything of that nature, it was a problem. He's not going to break anyone down. You know, what's interesting about both Okogie and Robinson is they're best players on not very good teams. And so you may get caught up a little bit in the numbers. Okogie comes out 26th on Pelton's numbers. I wasn't wowed. Okogie, by the way, on Pelton's actually comes out 51st on Pelton's numbers. So neither of these guys, numbers-wise, Okogie's 4% all-star, 17% starter, 44% rotation, 35% bust. And Robinson's 44% bust. And I actually thought that's what I saw. I didn't know those numbers until right now. I thought that's what I saw. Grayson Allen, here's the one thing I liked on Robinson. In the Duke game, Grayson Allen picked up Robinson full court and just stripped him twice. Just made it almost impossible for him to bring the ball up the floor. And he was just in him. What I loved about Grayson Allen, and maybe this is where he's older, but Robinson's not that young, is that Grayson Allen just sees this guy, picks him up mid-half court, and is just going to dominate him. Like, to me, that jumped out to me a little bit on how much, just kind of what I like about Grayson Allen. The other thing I love about Grayson Allen is that Grayson Allen gets every 50-50 ball there is. But, I mean, this is a case where Jerome Robinson's played 3 years of ACC. Grayson Allen knows him and knows that he's just not a bona fide point guard. So now he's a 6'3 off guard who probably can handle well enough on the pro level, but he wasn't great. Or 6'7, excuse me. I mean, he didn't play that big, though. He's got a really – I don't want to just totally be negative here. I thought I was going to fall in love with him. I did. I just thought the whole story, and And actually, now I'm looking, they have him listed 6'5". College stats had him listed at 6'6". I thought that this was going to... I've got now three different things. He's listed at 6'7", 6'6", and 6'5". Love it. I thought I would love him. But I just from everything I'd heard about him, I was pretty excited. I did it, he's smooth. He gets into his stuff. If he's a good NBA player, he'll be a complimentary NBA player. And I thought, it's interesting, but he didn't jump off to me quite the way I thought. In other words, of the players I'm watching, he's the most highly rated on Giovanni's board. Frankly, I have never seen the game the same way Giovanni does. I've always had him on the show and enjoyed him a great deal and think he does great work. He is not a player. He's not someone who sees the game the same way I do. So I understand where I was coming from in this. I think I was ready to fall in love with my prom date, and we just had an okay evening. He was fine. In regards to my lock five, I don't think I... The only thing I would come close to changing is whether I moved Grayson Allen above Musa, watching that. I love the fact that Allen just saw somebody and believed and had enough gumption to believe he could just annihilate him. I love the fact that Grayson Allen gets every 50-50 ball. I have two considerable concerns on Grayson Allen. One is that he has no lift in transition. So when he's going, he's a great athlete. He can get up and all, but when he's running full speed in transition, big strides, he doesn't get up. He has no lift in transition. I don't know if his transition numbers show that, but I can promise you that that's what I've seen. And then the second one that I have a concern on that people would laugh at is I have not seen that he's a great shooter. I talked to two different scouts last night on it. Both of them said he can shoot and with range. And if that's true, then I really like Grayson Allen. Because I just believe I'm watching him. I understand he's old, but I don't mind that he's old when I'm picking at 21. And he's got something to him. In the game I watched against Boston College, he started the night as the off guard. Duvall's terrible. And he then becomes the point guard. Which is just the fact that he can just, he's more than any of these guys, you're not projecting at all that he can play both. Grayson Allen in transition last year was just good, not great. Just rated in the 62nd percentile. And Grayson Allen around the basket last year was below average. So that backs up what I've seen visually, is that while he's a good athlete, it doesn't show in those circumstances. But he's run 99 pick and rolls last year. When you look at these guys who've run the most that aren't a point pure point guard, Allen's run 99 pick and rolls. A guy named Tyus Battle ran 212, but Allen ran the most of any of the combo guards. Trey Young ran 335, Colin Sexton 188, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander 218. By the way, my numbers would tell me to be very scared of Colin Sexton. Tony Carr, who's a second round pick out of Penn State, 212. Landry Shamet, 119, which is basically the same as 99. Aaron Holiday, 177. And Jalen Brunson, 155. So, you see Allen is now, he's only okay on running those, frankly. His numbers aren't great. Jerome Robinson, who kind of plays that combo as the same, it ran 97. He's better. He was far better numbers-wise, Jerome Robinson was than Allen. The both were the same on catch and shoot. Allen was better on guarded catch and shoot. And Allen had a terrible year on unguarded catch and shoot. And if you believe that's an anomaly, then he's pretty good. Jerome Robinson off the bounce is a much better shooter than just about anybody in this draft, statistically. All right, so the only change I would maybe make on my five is I might move great. It'd be Herter, Allen, Musa, Frazier, and Wagner. I'll keep watching. It's Locked On Jazz on the Locked On Podcast Network.